Let's talk tech.
Let's talk tech. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Thank you for joining us again for another episode of Let's Talk Tech. We hope you have been having a splendid listening experience from this season and you've been enjoying it as much as we have. My name is Oyin, your co-host, and with me I have...
Hello, people. I'm Temi, also your co-host.
Yeah, so today we are going to be having another really interesting episode. I'm not going to be telling you what it's about, but we will be talking to a very amazing person in the tech space, and in a bit she's going to introduce herself. But yeah, we will be talking to Celia. And we'll be asking her to tell us a bit more about her job, what she does, what a day in her life looks like. So yeah, Celia.
Hello.
Can we meet you?
Yeah, so I'm Celia. I'm a developer, a software developer, a coder. I never really know what to call it. People kind of understand different things. But basically, my job is to write code. I've been doing it for almost 5 years now. I work at a small digital agency, so we like do lots of projects for other people when they don't have the capacity or the skill. We come in and help them do that. Yeah. Is there anything else that I need to introduce about?
Whatever you want, whatever you feel comfortable with disclosing.
And when you said you've been doing that for 5 years, so is that 5 years at this particular agency or 5 years writing code?
So I started coding. Yeah, so I guess we'll get into this, but I applied to a boot camp to start coding 5 years ago, probably around about exactly this time. And then I started working at the company I work for now, Unboxed, in May of 2018. So I've worked at my current job for 4.5 years, but I've kind of been coding sort of for 5 years, yeah.
Awesome, you're a veteran.
Yeah, I guess that's kind of horrible to say out loud. 5 years, my God.
Time flies, eh?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So you said something that we actually touched on in a previous episode. I'm so pleased about how you introduced yourself because you called yourself a software developer. And we have a burning question here. What is the difference, please, between a software developer and a software engineer? We, the Let's Talk Tech fam, would like to know.
We want to know.
I actually have no idea either. I would use those things like interchangeably, but is that not right?
That was our sneaky suspicion.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Here's a way to differentiate. How would you describe your job role? Because I noticed you use a lot of like coding when you were describing what you do. So how would you describe yourself as a software developer then?
Software developer to me maybe suggests more like, yeah, writing the code itself, whereas software engineer maybe has more to do with like the system and like DevOps,
beautiful,
developer operations and that kind of thing.
Yeah, this is perfect. So we this is actually two sides of a coin, is what we're doing. So you are a software developer and we had a software engineer on in the last episode, and both of you have really just shown that you're two sides of the same coin, which is awesome, because his description was a bit more system oriented, like you just said,
right?
So the end-to-end DevOps, but then also like build, maintain, that kind of stuff, whereas
products,
you're focusing
like
more
product development process.
Exactly, whereas you're focusing more on the coding and development aspect. So it's cool, we're covering both spectrums. Look at that. What amazing service we're providing over here? Like,
no,
amazing.
We're gonna pretend we planned that.
Yeah. I think, yeah, it's interesting as well, because I think as a software developer, you might also be expected to do a bit of that software engineer stuff. And I certainly am at the moment, but I definitely wouldn't call myself an expert in the software engineer space. Like, I'm much more nervous about that stuff, whereas software development.
Well, you feel more comfortable owning
in
the development.
Yeah,
that's cool.
Whereas I'm trying to learn about the DevOps stuff, and it's really cool. And like knowing how the internet works is a bit, woo, like, still not quite there, but I'm getting there.
And so as part of like what we like to do is like we like to tell our guests to break things down to people, to our audience. So what is DevOps?
So DevOps, developer operations, development operations. I don't even know what the dev stands for.
I think it's development.
Development. That makes more sense, yeah. Is about kind of hosting and maintaining your website on the internet. So you can build a lovely website for yourself and code it, but you can't get it onto the internet and have other people out in the big wide world looking at it without some bit of DevOps. And there are some sites that'll just host it for you, and it's really helpful and you don't really have to do anything. Or you can get into the real nitty gritty of it and be like, I want a server over there that does exactly this, and I'm going to put this system on that server, and then I want that server to sit inside this network, inside this gateway, and this gateway is going to talk to that gate. So you can get into the whole nitty gritty of it, and it's very complicated. But yeah, DevOps is all about doing that, and less about the and deploying it to all of that and making sure all the system is up and running, whereas the software development side is more of the I'm going to write some code and make this website nice and work. Yeah,
I was just going to say, like, is it more design? Is it more functionality? Is it a mix of both?
Yeah, I think it really depends on what kind of software development you end up doing. So often we end up talking about back end and front end. And back end is a bit more, I'm going to make, say you had a website that sold shoes.
Mm-hmm.
You need, the back end would be like, I need the functionality of the back end to be able to sell the shoes and to be able to know how many customers I've got and to be able to keep track of orders.
Whereas like storing that information.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And making sure that all of that functionality works, that you can sell a shoe. Whereas the front end would be making the website look nice to your customers. And so sometimes some software developers are like, I'm a front end developer, and some are a back end developer. And I do a bit of both.
I was going to say, which one are you?
Yeah, I do a bit of both. But then you get
so you're the unicorn of the software development world.
I don't think so. I think it means I'm a jack of all trades, master of none. But...
No. Do you know what the full? Do you know that full saying? That's not actually the full. That's not the full.
Oh, really?
Phrase. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The full saying. I'm googling it just to make sure I am. We don't like to spread misinformation. So the complete saying is, a jack of all trades is a master of none, but oftentimes better than a master of one. So there you go.
Oh, that you've turned that around very nicely. That makes you feel better.
Well, that was just part of the service we provide here. What can I say? Yeah, awesome. That's really cool. So software dev, you do a bit of front end, back end. Can you give us a bit of insight into, like, how did you get into it? I think you told us a little bit in terms of, like, you went to a boot camp and then you've been at your role since, but can you give us some more detail? How did you find out about this boot camp? Like, what did you study at uni? How did you, like, how did this become a thing for you?
Yeah, so at uni, I studied classics, which is Latin and Greek. And as you can imagine, you graduate and
I love
you
have it.
Absolutely no idea what to do with Latin and Greek. It's a bit useless, but it was fun at the time. And like a lot of people who study that tend to go into like law or become a teacher or that kind
so
of thing.
So this is the thing, like I went to my school did classics, my A-level school
great.
Did classics. I didn't do it, but I knew people who did. And they've gone on to do really interesting things. I think there's something about that degree. Whilst you all say it's useless, everyone kind of pivots into something really cool afterwards. So it must give you something like...
Yeah, I think just as a side note, my granddad was a classicist and then was like,
okay, cool.
Did a lot of like code breaking in the war, we think. So it's all about like...
Was he part of the Enigma code people?
He was at Bletchley Park.
Yo.
But we don't really know what he was doing.
Top secret.
I hope classified. I haven't just lied.
Yeah.
I think that's the story. You know when you're like...
Your granddad was part of breaking the Enigma code. We're running with it.
Yeah, right. But Yeah, I think it's about problem solving, because it's a language that you don't really speak. So it's all about kind of translation and then trying to work out what these people were like 2,000 years ago, and you can't ever really know. So it's all a bit, that's what I tell myself anyway.
Like problem solving, right?
Yeah. And then
sounds familiar.
Exactly.
So yeah, I graduated, and then I spent about 3 months just with no job, having no idea what to do, just flapping around, randomly applying for jobs and not getting them because I didn't really want them. And then my friend who had done computer science at university said to me, hey, you really like doing the crossword. I think you'd like coding. And I said, okay. And I like did a little bit of it online. I was like, oh yeah, this is kind of cool. I do like this. I kind of see the code, the problem solving aspect. Yeah. And then my other friend who had done chemistry at university said she was going to a boot camp to learn to code. So I was like, oh, that's a thing. So then I got my boyfriend, who's very good at doing research, to look up all the coding boot camps for me and work out which was the best one, because I'm not good at that, but he's very good at that.
It's important to be able to delegate, you know, it's a key skill in life.
Exactly. And the one I wanted to go to that my friend had gone to, he was like, that one looks dodgy. And later on, it turned out it all shut down. So he was right. He's a good researcher. Wow. but anyway, yeah, I chose a coding boot camp. I applied. I went for 9 weeks. It was a Ruby and Ruby on Rails bootcamp, which is what I now code in.
Ruby on Rails, that's a language, that's a programming language, right?
So Ruby is the language, Ruby on Rails is the framework. Let's not get hung up on that.
What's a framework? What's that, please?
So Rails specifically, the guy who built Rails kept starting projects in Ruby and being like, I have to keep making the same files over and over again and doing the same things over and over again. Why don't I just build something that just sets this all up for me? So Rails, basically, if you type in like, make me a Rails app, it'll just throw up all the files you need, set up like a database for you. It also gives you some extra like sprinkling on top of just nice things to use. I call it black magic because I don't know how it works, but it makes my life easier. So yeah, it's really on Rails.
That's cool. Yeah. So it's almost like a platform for your, or like skeleton. That's a better
word.
That's
a good word. Like a skeleton. And so then like there's now this whole Rails community where everyone has to maintain Rails, which is the framework. But it's a really, it's very useful, because otherwise I'd have to do a lot of things from scratch, but Rails helps you just spin it up a bit quicker, basically.
Awesome.
So you said, so you don't have to do things from scratch. And we're talking about ChatGPT at the last episode. So do you think that AI would take your job?
Yeah, let's be real.
I guess there are definitely certain parts that could do it. And like, so for example, we do a lot of stuff in the public sector. Mm. And if you want to do anything in the public sector, obviously it has to be incredibly accessible so everyone in the public can read it and understand it and use it. Like if you need a screen reader, you need to be able to know that your website works for a screen reader. So what the UK government has come up with is a design system, and they just have all this code that you can take, which you know is really accessible, and you can just plug it in where you need it to be. So I kind of think like, if you like, just throw me up a website, a government website, AI at some point could just definitely be like, oh, you want this prototype, you want this component, you want this component, and just chuck it all together. And also, we've already got websites that like Wix and like those kind of things that you can just
space,
where you can build your own stuff. So I don't see why AI couldn't just.
Are you worried? Are you
concerned? Am I worried?
Talk to us. This is a safe space.
I guess, to be honest, that would be quite nice. That's like the boring bit of my job. Like, it would be nice. It's nice to think about how to build it and how to structure things and how it's going to work and how it's all going to fit together. Like the actual writing of the code is the bit that maybe a bit of automation would be nice.
Okay, I think that's a really good perspective on it, because I completely agree with you. Lord, that makes it sound like, yeah. But no, I just mean, I've thought about it and I've arrived at the same conclusion in terms of, I think we need to look at it as like an enabler of like time saving and efficiencies and effectiveness. Like if we can get rid of the manual, like repeatable tasks that you said, and focus instead of innovation and creativity, then hopefully we can have like better output. So yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Awesome.
Okay, so which probably brings us to the next question. So you were talking about how you went for went to that boot camp, and then you were learning Ruby on Rails. So how did you sort of go from learning Ruby on Rails to working as a software developer?
Yes, so I finished the boot camp, and then came the hard bit of finding a job, because I now know this from the other side, like taking on a junior developer is a lot of hard work, because you think you can write all the code, but writing code for your own little project website is very different from writing code that's going to go out in the public, and production level code is just a whole different thing. And you have to learn about all this stuff about Git and collaborating with others and reviewing other people's, and there's just a whole other world.
Sorry, please, what's Git?
So Git is a thing that we use to like version our code. So if, okay, so imagine a time, I'm using my hands, which people won't be able to see. There's a timeline of code, and here is the code that we deploy to the production, which everyone sees. Mm-hmm. But say I want to work on a feature, I don't just want to keep putting it on the main bit of the code, because my feature might have loads of bad bits that break. And then that would be on production. So I take a kind of like branch off it, and I do my own little thing on my branch. And then before I say, yep, this is ready to go to production, I get other people to look at my code and be like, oh, that looks a bit wrong. Or, oh, there's a nice way to do this. Or, oh, I think that's going to break. And once we've gone through that whole reviewing process, then it goes back in to the main bit of code. And then we push that to production. And so Git is just a way to help us branch off, put points in time in our code, so if something goes wrong, we can say, oh, let's roll back to that point in time, because we know that that point in time the code was working fine. So
sounds very sensible.
So you learn a lot, like
Control Z in a way.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, no, exactly. And you learn a bit of that. Well, I learned a bit of that at boot camp, but not to the full extent that you really need it, and not the full powerful version. So yes, taking on a junior developer is hard, and they need a lot of help and a lot of work and a lot of commitment. So when I first started looking for jobs, I was like, why is no one looking for a junior developer? and it's because it's a lot of work. So I must have applied to maybe like 20 jobs, which is not a lot in the grand scheme of things. But I think it also helps that I'm a woman. And people love to hire women in tech roles because there aren't enough people.
I get what you mean. Yeah.
So then actually a recruiter called me out of the blue and said, Unbox is looking for a developer. And I said, sure. And I had to do a test where they asked me to write a little application, and then they looked through it and went through it with me. And then they gave me the job. And then I was a junior developer.
Congrats, well done.
Thank you.
Just quickly, you said you were reached out to by a recruiter. How do they get your information?
I think it must have been LinkedIn. Okay. Yeah, if you're on LinkedIn and you're in tech, everyone I know just gets flooded with requests. They may be relevant, they may be completely irrelevant.
I can confirm that's true. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, if you haven't got LinkedIn, you heard
what are you doing?
Celia.
Yeah,
you might be holding yourself back.
I think so, yeah. Really.
So once you got on board, you've touched on it a little bit in terms of like the transition from practicing building your own projects to building things that were going to go live to clients. How did you kind of manage that the transition of that?
It was really hard. I think as a developer you develop a pretty tough skin quite quickly, because people just reject your work a lot and say, no, that's not right. Have you seen this? No, that's not right. Look at the documentation. And so you learn to deal with people really thoroughly going through your work and saying no, which is good. It breaks down your ego a little bit and then builds it back up again.
And I guess it helps make you better, right, fundamentally, because you said, you're a junior, you don't really know that much in terms of like best practice or like whatever. Or you know theoretically, but practically. And then it's like helping you get to the like actual practical working ability.
I think. And luckily I had a really, really lovely, a really lovely senior developer who basically just had to sit with me for days and days and days and be like, let's go through this bit of code that you've just written. Let's look at this line. Let's look at this line. Let's work it out. And that happened for, it was like a good 6 months of really, well, it felt kind of torturous, but you come out on the other end and you're good to go.
I feel like both you and our previous guest, the software engineer, making software world sound so like family. Like, it's so nice. Like, oh, this senior helped me and like molded me and now I'm a boss. Like, it's awesome. I love that.
I think in the tech world, there's definitely, as a developer, there's definitely a lot of mentoring and like passing down your knowledge and wanting to help others get better, because I guess in the end it's going to make your own life easier, but it's nice to pass on and help people get, to be useful you have to get better really quickly, and the way you're going to do that is pass on, learn from others, I guess.
Nice. I like it. So you've taken us on a nice journey into like, you studied classics, you went to the boot camp, then you did a load of applications, put yourself on LinkedIn, then you got the job. What does a typical day look like? So now you're more comfortable, you've learned the ropes. Well, I mean, you today, five years removed from that, what does your day look like? And I guess if you can remember, how does that differ to what it used to look like when you first started out?
Yeah, so like, I guess if I go through my day, for example, today, I'm working on a little project that we're doing with the NHS. So I had a meeting this morning where we were talking.
What's the NHS?
Sorry, the National Health Service, which is the free health service that the UK has. Woo! Let's get political.
There was some subtext behind that, but we won't go into it.
No, I'll leave that to one side. So I had a meeting about, we're working on a new feature, and I had a meeting with a designer and kind of a product owner, so he kind of has the vision over the whole product and is thinking about what will be good in the future and what needs to change now. So we talked through how we might visualize some data that we're showing them. And we looked at some sketches and we threw out some ideas. And then I went away and started trying to like roughly code what I thought we talked about. So that meant doing some backend thing, looking at the data I was getting, working out what data I needed, how I needed to format that data usefully to put it back in the front end. And then in the front end, I messed around with a bit of pixels, you know, like making the padding a bit bigger, making the font white, you know, that kind of thing. And I submitted a pull request, which means I want to put my code back into the main branch of the code. And I asked my colleague to look at that so that she could give me some feedback and say what I needed to improve. Because even as a senior, you need to be getting feedback because you'll have missed something. And then I waited for her to review my code. And thought about some other things. And I guess as a junior developer, it might have been similar, but I think I would have felt less confident in suggesting solutions, having had less context and less idea of how things might have worked. I definitely would have had less direct contact with the clients, I think. Right now, I feel very confident to go and ask them questions. I mean, I would have been encouraged to do that, but I was just a little scared newbie. And I probably would have asked for more help along the way to get to where I got to. Like today, as I was coding, my colleague was sat next to me, and I would ask her occasionally, like, oh, what do you think about this? Or like, oh, how do you, I can't remember how to do this. Can you help me? And as a junior, I might have needed a lot more guidance, and that, and had, I guess, the whole concepts broken down a bit more and explained to me, like, in tasks, like, first you do this, then you do this, then you do this. Whereas now it's a bit more instinctive, and I can kind of get to that by myself and know what to do.
It's cool to see the evolution.
Yeah, and just like the difference between how you're approaching the different problems. So you were saying that as a junior, you would be more, you wouldn't be thinking more about just like how to solve the problem. So I guess more of just like an order taker. So it's just like, yeah, do this.
Yeah, it's nice to be able to step back and take on a bit more responsibility, I guess. It's nice once you feel like your professional instincts kick in, I guess, and you're like, oh, I know how to do this. I'm just going to get on with it.
Be nice. And then you mentioned some people that you were working with. So just like your colleague, your designer, the product owner. So typically, maybe on a project or something you're working on, who are the kinds of people you'd be working with?
Can I disclose that Oyin and I have worked together?
You work together.
Yeah, we do, not kind of, not in the same organization. I deliberately didn't tell you, Timmy. Yeah.
That is so jokes.
So yeah. We don't work in the same organization, but my organization, Unbox, is our development agency.
Oh, I
see. So we work with them, yeah, for our development work.
So, like, yeah, before Oyin and I start working together properly, like, we'll have some calls and talk through her designs, and I'll give some feedback, and we'll talk about them from like a more technical standpoint, I guess, because you've done the user research and know what kind of needs to happen, but I can guide it depending on what I think the technical constraints might be. Yeah, so work with designers a lot, which I really like. You tend to like think in a slightly different way, which is really fun, and it's nice to get a try and improve my visual skills a little bit. A lot of delivery managers and product owners, the whole kind of agile landscape. I don't know if you've touched on agile before, but that's...
No, please help. What's agile?
It's like a methodology of working. It's all about working in cycles. So gradually improving things, not just saying we need this and in 6 months we're going to deliver it. It's kind of like, we think we need this, let's explore that a bit, let's try building this. Oh, that hasn't quite worked, but it doesn't matter because we're just going to iterate and try this way. And it gets used a lot in the software development space because it's a good way to build products, I think.
I like it. It's a good definition.
I hope it is. I've been doing it for 5 years now, so I can't explain it.
Just out of interest, what's your most productive time of the day? Are you a early riser, hit the desk, tap, 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 or do you kind of ease into it, or are you just one of those unique people that just goes all day?
I'm definitely a morning person. I tend to find like by the end of the day, I'm really tired. And then I get to work and I'm like, oh, my brain has solved that problem that I didn't know it was solving. But while I was sleeping, it's been doing its thing. And now I know
the answer. I call that background processing.
The other night I was like getting into bed and then I suddenly said to my boyfriend, remember this. Condition where da, 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 da. And he's like, what are you talking about? I was like, no, I need to remember that because that's how I'm going to solve that problem tomorrow morning.
Human notepad.
Okay. Yeah. So wait, you're just to keep track of the features that your boyfriend has: researcher,
yeah.
Note taker,
yeah.
Reminder service.
Yeah. Poor guy.
Awesome. Okay, cool. Yeah, morning. That seems to be a bit of a theme.
Really? That's interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting because I thought like programmers are like night owls or something.
Yeah. I think there are definitely some of those. Like some of my colleagues like working like late into the night, but I think that's stupid. Really?
Oh, you just raised their hands for those who can't see. Yes. I definitely don't like working late into the night. Mm-mm. Like I wouldn't say I'm an early bird, but like I will start when I like 8, 9, and then I want to be done by like 5 or 6.
Yeah, you're talking my language, definitely. Yeah.
What time do you work? Or what are you working hours? 3 is like, nope.
No, so the thing is, if I try, I can actually work at any time, to be fair. Mm. But like optimum, of course, everybody can work at any time. But like when my brain is like actually really working, it's usually just 11 p.m., midnight, 1 a.m. Whenever it's just like really quiet and dark.
Some of us are sleeping. When the rest of us are sleeping, is what you're
saying.
Listen, telling
me. I am Batman, okay? That is what I call my life.
I think we should like have these conversations at the start of a project. It'd be a great insight into everyone. Like, night worker. That's good to know.
And early morning is actually really good as well. So like 4 a.m., 5, 6,
what
7.
Are you talking about?
So what I'm like, hearing is Oye likes to work like, from 11 a.m. to like 7, 11 p.m. to 7 a.m. is what I'm hearing. Are your preferred working hours?
What is happening?
I don't like afternoon.
She could pull the night shift and then the rest of you clock on during the day, you know. Really?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Oh, geez.
So your organization is based in the UK. So you and Nigeria has very similar working like hours. So how are you? What are you doing? I don't understand. If you were like in Japan, it would make sense. Have you considered it?
Yeah. Well, the good thing about work is that it's also flexible. So sometimes when it's like, there's something that I can actually, like if I want to just some focus work, I'll just time it to that time when I want to do some work. Sometimes I try not to make it a habit, but yeah, it really just depends.
So speaking of like the misconception that all developers love to code in the dark, what are some of the biggest misconceptions that people have of you as a software developer specifically?
I think my colleague actually was talking about it the other day, and I don't know if this is specific to my job, but I think it's general, is that like being good at coding, actual writing code, is probably only 10 to 20% of the job.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. You got me there because I thought you had to be excellent coder.
Interesting.
To be a software developer.
Continue.
Well, I just think the main bit of it is communication and being able to like. And don't get me wrong, I've met a lot of developers who are not good communicators, but the good developers are the ones who can. If you're talking to a designer and the designer says, "Why can't you do this?" you can explain it to them and you can work with them and come up with a better solution that will work for both of you. And just saying no and going really technical is really unhelpful for everyone. And if you can just talk to people and like work out ideas together, I think that makes you a much better developer. And if you can write really beautiful code, that's kind of fine. But probably 95% of the code out there in the world is ugly, horrible code, and it does the job, and that's kind of all you need. So I'm gonna die on this hill. I think not being able to code well is fine. It's
like
all about
it.
Yeah.
It's a very unique take. I like it. you said something that piqued my interest there. You said ugly code and beautiful code. As someone who's not a programmer, what makes a code beautiful, what makes a code ugly, from your perspective, of course?
Yeah, so I think a senior developer once said to me, which I found really interesting, was that a really senior developer's code actually tends to look a bit like a junior developer's code in that they've done it the simplest way possible. There seems to be this kind of evolution where like when you're a junior, you only know kind of simple ways to do things. And so you just do it that way. And then as you get more senior, you know, all these kind of fancy things and you do that and you do this really cool, complex thing. But the thing about code is it needs to be readable by others, because inevitably you're going to leave your job and then the next developer's going to come and look at your code and be like, what the hell were they thinking? I don't understand this at all. And then it will break, or they'll break it or something. So it needs to be, the main thing is to be readable. So as you're getting mid, you're kind of making this in some ways bad code, I would argue, that other people don't understand. And then as you go back to senior, you go back to doing it in the simplest, most efficient way. So I would argue that's the good code, the kind of simple, does the job, people know what it's doing. We talk about these things called like code smells. And it's this thing where you kind of look at a code and it's got like a code smell, like you just know it's kind of wrong. Like if it like if it looks a bit complex or you're not really
your
sure
code
what you're doing,
stinks.
Yeah, basically you're like, oh, something's up with that code. It's not right. Yeah, you can look it up. Code smells. It's a thing. Yeah. My friend just started learning to code and messaged me and my other friend who's a developer and said, what on earth is a code smell? And we're like, yeah, it's this kind of vague concept that just your code is a bit wrong, but you don't know why.
Oh, wow. That's really cool. I love the way you explain that. Very, very easy to understand. Thank you.
Mm. Yeah, and then speaking of the different, just like the tangent from where it goes, like your junior level, how you're writing code, to like the mid level where you're writing superstar code, and then the senior where you just go back to basics. What does a career progression look like for a software developer?
Yeah, so it tends to go junior, mid, senior, and then you can kind of take two routes from there. I think you can either, people tend to either go more into like the management bit of it, where you'll have a team of developers working for you and you'll be their manager. And they actually tend to start coding much less, and they'll just be reviewing other people's code and mentoring them and helping them out. Or you can go into kind of like supersonic senior developer, where you'll just code, you still stay coding and you're coding at a really high level and helping others. But yeah, you can either, it seems to be a kind of split at some point where you either go into the management or you stay in the coding side. And then there's things like CTOs.
The final boss of coding.
Exactly.
Is that just like one line of code that just does it all?
Well, I would argue that might be really unreadable code, so that would be bad. But
sorry, you were saying, and then CTO.
Yeah, so like a chief technical officer, you might go to a company and kind of map out their technical strategy and what languages they should be using and what frameworks they should be using and that kind of thing. But again, I would say a CTO is probably not coding, but sort of more managing and thinking big picture. If you want to be a CTO, you're not going to be coding a lot, I would say.
Mm. Mm. But with probably like deep experience and like a lot of years of developing.
Yeah.
And
coding. Oh, yeah, yeah. You're not going to. Yeah, that's a long way off.
And what direction are you leaning towards?
I always thought that like in 10 years time, I just won't be a developer. I'll just be doing something. I like the people side of coding, if that's not coming across. Like,
we'll accept you with open arms.
Yeah, I like kind of the thing that code does rather than what it is itself, if that makes sense. And the relationships that you build and that kind of thing.
Cool.
So God knows what I'll be doing. No,
do you still, do you think you still like be in technology, or you're looking beyond that?
Yeah, I don't really know. I don't know.
Fair enough.
Just see where life takes me, I guess.
That's fair. Yeah. Awesome. So we are at the point that the people look forward to the most.
Money.
I feel like we need a we need a theme tune. I think you've given us one.
Yeah, let's have a theme song when we get to that point. It's like a bust up song. And then we know.
Show me the money. So
what's that song? Must Be the Money.
Oh yeah. Money. I don't.
Oh, anyway.
Must Be the Money.
Yeah.
I know what I can't remember the rest of the song right now.
No.
But I think this is a perfect place. You just took us through junior, mid, senior. So could you please give us an idea of the salary or the salary range for that progression pathway you just described for us?
Yeah. So I guess my perspective is going to be from London, which is where I live, which will typically just have higher salaries than other places. Like my friend who is a developer in Leeds, at the similar level to I am, actually he's got more experience than I have, earns less than me because he's not.
Let's put a caveat there. London is expensive.
Yes.
London is very expensive. It's one of the highest cost of living cities in the world. So that's why salaries are higher, just in case you're wondering.
Yeah, like
but yes, you, please.
Yeah. So I guess a junior probably earns between 25,000 and 40,000 pounds. And then as mid is probably like 40 to 60, and then a senior is 60 to 80. But it also depends whether you work in the public or private sector, obviously. Public, it seems to be that you're earning like 10 to 20k less than the private sector. But, and it also seems to be that you kind of get capped as a software developer at maybe, again, London standards, around 100k, which is a lot of money. But unless you then go to like CTO or work somewhere crazy, I think like Deliveroo has six-figure salaries, which is insane.
In pounds or in dollars?
In pounds. But
okay. To be fair,
options. Okay.
Oh, it's like to be fair, I feel like all these digital native organizations would probably pay higher. So like I'm thinking like Uber, Deliveroo, Airbnb, where they're so reliant on their digital ecosystem, right? So they probably invest in that more than maybe traditional.
Yeah. So with this whole thing of Twitter blowing up, me and my colleagues looked into how much a Twitter developer earns. And it's it's like 300k. But you are expected to work, I think, maybe 20 hours a day.
Sorry, $300k dollars?
No, or before you put them on the list, there are beds in the office.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's a toxic environment.
Is it pre-Elon or post-Elon?
I guess this was when he was in charge, so post. No, it was $300,000, yeah. But that's...
Wow. I think that's Twitter, Meta, Google...
Netflix developers. Also pays loads.
Yeah, FANG, as they like to call themselves. Yeah. They all... AWS as well, Amazon Web Services. I think they pay their developers a lot of money.
Yeah, but that is not the norm.
That's not the norm. Yeah. That's like extreme. Unicorn. That's unicorn. Yeah.
And you'll be killing yourself while working. So
you'll be sleeping at the office. So who wants that?
And you pay for it, so...
Awesome, thank you so much. That has shed a lot of light, which is what we're trying to do here.
Yeah, so if someone is hearing all this and is like, yep, I can hear where all the money's at, no guys, don't go into tech because of money. But yeah, someone is like, yeah, this sounds really interesting, I want to do your job, what kind of learning path would you recommend, or what kind of learning resources would you send them to?
Yeah, so I guess you'd just have to pick a language to start with, and people get very het up about that, but I think it doesn't really matter, just pick one. Ruby's great, go for Ruby, that's what I do, it's very nice. Then there are lots of websites that are really helpful and free. I think you have to sign up, but that's it. And they'll take you step by step through things. And then...
Do any of those websites come to mind right now or no?
I mean, honestly, just writing Learn Ruby will get you like 10.
Yeah, true.
There are loads of free meetups where people, you can go and then more senior people come and help you learn to code. Just look on Meetup. There's like a Ruby users group in London, and people give talks and then hang out together. I gave a talk at a Python meetup the other week, and these two guys both wanted to learn Python, and they were like, we should meet up because we were in exactly the same position. So there's loads of really great free resources. Boot camps, it's worked for me, but it is an expensive option. But I don't think I've ever known someone to not get a job after boot camp. So it's a kind of financial burden at the beginning, but it quickly pays off. But I do understand that a lot of people won't be able to afford that option.
Just for transparency's sake, do you mind saying how much was the boot camp?
Yeah, so the one I went to, I think it's probably gone up in price now as well, was £6,000 for 9 weeks.
Jeez.
But I got a job 2 months later.
Yeah.
Is it one of those like do this and job guaranteed kind of thing?
Yeah, so a lot of them do that too now. They'll give you your money back if you don't get a job within X amount of weeks. I've not read the small print on that, so I would look into that. But yeah, so there are loads of boot camps. There are also remote ones, which are cheaper, and you like learn over a year maybe.
Okay, yours was in person.
Yeah, mine was in person. Okay. This is all like pre-COVID. Yeah. And just there's loads of really nice, helpful people out there, it seems to me, in the tech world. And especially if you come, if you're from an underrepresented group, people are really trying to reach out to people and help them get into the tech space. Like, I've met lots of people who are really passionate about that and want to help others who've had fewer opportunities. That's a bit of a, yeah, I would like to see the tech world a lot more diverse than it is currently.
Yes, this is something we're quite passionate about over here. So, final question for you, and hopefully it's one that you enjoy. What are you most excited about when you think about software development and then also technology at large?
Yeah, so I'm a bit of a boring person. Like, I don't really care about the metaverse or Web3 or blockchain. Like, I think there are some interesting things it can do, but it doesn't
excite. I don't care about metaverse either. I think it's a bit of a scam right now, but whatever.
Yeah, and I have a good friend who's really into it, and she talks about it a lot, and
right now the technology isn't there. Like, you go in there and there's avatars, like, what is that? Nah. Like, when it's a proper immersive experience, give me a call, I'll be there. Like, not there yet.
Yeah, I guess what I'm excited for is, like, I think 20 years ago this industry looked incredibly white and incredibly male, and I can see it's changing. Mm-hmm. And I just think once we get more people in, it's like the ideas that we're going to come up with and the solutions that we're going to come up to with problems are going to be incredible and so much better, because we'll have so many more perspectives on it and so many more ideas. That's what I'm excited about.
Yeah, and I think that's really important, because, like, if we're building technologies that are going to power the future, technologies that are going to really shape the future of humanity, the people that build it have to look like humanity, have to look like, you know, have to be diverse, so that they don't create products that cause harm. So, I think that's really important.
It's just, you know, it's the classic, like, men building period trackers, and they just have like no idea, or just like, you're like, what are you doing? You've not spoken to a woman or a person who has a period, like, be better. Yeah. And you want people who experience those things to be building those things.
Yeah.
To take a very basic example, but
couldn't agree with you more, to be honest. Yeah. I think it's like technology is so, like, wide and far reaching these days. Like you're saying, we use it for things like health tracking, use it for convenient entertainment, and you want it to be reflective of your lived experience. You don't want it to be reflective of someone else's or only one group. So I think it's really important that all of us are represented in these areas, men, women, and all the races, all the kind of different perspectives that we bring, I think. And it would make, like you said, for cooler products, right? And, like, just different ways of thinking.
And it's the classic of, like, when you don't do that, it's actually really dangerous and scary. Like, AI facial recognition.
Oh, yeah.
Where, like, you're using that to, like, prosecute people, and it doesn't recognize black faces. And that's like, it's terrifying.
Yeah, I think we recommended the documentary last season, but Joy Buluwami, she's an MIT researcher, Coded Bias, and she talks exactly about that. Imagine, she is an AI machine learning researcher, and the, like, algorithm developed by some of her colleagues in their lab couldn't recognize her face.
God.
And she was right there. So it's not even like she existed, but because she wasn't working on it until she had input, they didn't make it for someone who looked like her, even though they see her almost every day. So that just, like, highlights how important it is. And like you said, facial recognition in some parts of the world more than others is increasingly being used for, like, criminal justice. And it's just kind of scary to think about if we don't address that diversity issue, what could it lead to? Have you seen The Capture? It's a BBC drama. It's so interesting. So it talks about like deep fake technology. So the premise, I don't want to give away too much because I really recommend you guys should go watch it. But basically, so the premise is what happens if you utilize deep fake technology with facial recognition when government are using facial recognition to prosecute people. And I won't give away too much of the storyline, but it just like, it's a really scary and like very realistic take on what could happen if that kind of technology got into the wrong hands. So wow. Yeah, for sure. Diversity is very important. And like, yeah, do no harm is also very important.
Definitely. Definitely.
Yeah. I feel like we need to have, and I think someone mentioned this before, like we need to have like a code of conduct, you know, how like doctors have, is it Hippocrates? How do they, how do they pronounce?
Hippocratic oath, right?
Yeah, something like that.
We need one for technologists. Anyone who wants to be a technologist needs to take the oath.
because it's a wild west out here.
It also has like really big environmental impacts as well. Like knowing that if you use dark mode on your phone, it saves so much energy. And like that in turn rolls down the road. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like showing white pixels takes up more energy than showing dark pixels.
I did not know that.
Yeah, yeah. That kind of blew my mind.
I've been saving the environment without knowing it.
You're welcome. I can't
stand light mode. Like...
I love dark mode. Everything's in dark mode. If... Oh, see
little things like that.
There's an amazing fact. But yeah, I think that's it.
Thank you, Celia. That was really great. And I'm sure you're probably teaching people, but you're very good at just like breaking things down. So
yeah.
I hope I made sense.
You did. It was awesome. Thank you.
Yeah. Really nice to talk to you guys too.
Really nice to meet you, and I enjoyed your take on all things technology and software development, and the people. The importance of the people.
Did you like the revelation that Oyin and I work together too?
I love that. The surprise was real, guys. The surprise was real. I had no idea. I also have a colleague coming on and she's not going to know who it is. Or maybe I already have.
Well, you already told me, so now I have to look out for it.
Or maybe they've already been on. See?
Oh, mystery. Yeah.
This is a podcast of mystery and technology and intrigue. Like, you don't know what you're gonna get.
Who knows? Maybe I'll invite my brother next. And you.
Oh man!
Right.
Thank you guys for tuning in to another episode of Let's Talk Tech. We hope you enjoyed our day in the life with Celia, a wonderful software developer, and we hope you learned more about what it means to be a software developer. We'll catch you on the next episode. Bye bye.
Bye.